Well, hey everybody, it's Monday, and that means it's movie time, like it always is on Monday.
And this one here,
Xanada sent us this, so thank you again very much, Xanada, because Xanada is here.
Yeah, it's called Come and See. It's a Russian movie.
Soviet
movie, actually, from around 1985,
85,
I think. 85, with kind of like an all-nobody cast that became stars after they were in the movie.
Well, not really. The main guy, I think, became an actor, but not until like 15 years after this movie came out.
Right, yeah.
But when he was in this, he was a kid, and he had no acting experience whatsoever, which you would absolutely not know when you were watching this, because the kid in this is amazing.
Yeah, it's a war story, war movie, based upon some real life actual events, and it's happening in Belarus on the Eastern Front. Bunch of villagers who are in partisan units, which are kind of like defense militia, probably a good way to put them, and they're trying to defend the country from the Third Reich, man, fucking the German armies tearing through the fucking place. And in their wake, a bunch of guys are following them, known as Einsatzgruppen, which meant task force or special action group. They weren't soldiers. They were usually recruited from cops or convicts sometimes. And their job was to kill civilians, to depopulate Russia.
Yeah. I mean, essentially that's what their task was.
Yeah. Fucking...
we want the land and we don't want the people on
it. Yeah. I saw some other movies that were based upon around the meetings that had happened in Germany. What made him decide this? See, the Germans, or the National Socialists, were allied to the International Socialists, which were the Soviets. They kind of had a lot in common. National Socialism was kind of like communism with Germanic aspects to it. It was a different interpretation of kind of the same ideas that Marx had come up with. So they had a non-aggression pact between them. And Stalin thought it was going to hold. He really believed old Mustache Man. But Mustache Man decided that all countries were Germany, really. And that Russia was Germany, too. It just had a bunch of people on it he didn't want. So he launched something called Operation Barbarossa, which was a sneak attack on Russia. And it failed, of course. You're never going to beat them Russians in land warfare on their own home turf. It's just too fucking big. You might as well be at sea. And they had time to regroup and fight them off. The American concept of World War II is kind of a bullshit concept.
Well, we didn't enter until later.
We didn't come into it later. And, we'll sit here, and I'm from the 101st Airborne Division, We did a lot of missions during D-Day and against the Germans and... Our kind of Hollywood makes it look like we won World War II against the Germans. No, the Russians did it.
And a lot of the Europeans think that's very hilarious, too. So, that like all the American war babies are just kind of like, here we are, you're welcome.
About 20% of the American war effort was against Germany. The rest of it was all against Japan. Our war was Japan, all right? Germany was kind of like a side gig. And we weren't really all in on it. We made a lot of money selling shit to the Russians and lend-lease stuff to the Russians and helping the British out. But really, all the heavy lifting was done by Russia. And they just laugh, The Russians laugh. They have a totally different concept of warfare than we have. They're fucking real tough. And when they see Hollywood going on about 6 million Jews killed in the concentration camps, the Russians laugh at that. They had 27 million killed. 27 million killed. And one of the Russians said, and out of those 27 million killed, probably more than 6 million of them were Jews, were Russian Jews. They just did it in a different way. They did it worse. All right. And that's what this movie's about. When the Einsatzgruppen came into your town, man, you would have been better off in a death camp. Because in a death camp, you showed up and you were dead 12 hours later. What the Einsatzgruppen did to you was just fucking merciless, all right? Terrible. Now, one of those groups was a famous one, and they're not in this movie. They were the 36th SS the 36th Waffen SS Grenadier unit, and they were all from taken from convicts. Their commander was like a pedo convict. He was a serial rapist and shit. And they did some shit that was just so bad that normal SS units were trying to accusing them of war crimes. That's bad when an SS is accusing them of war crimes.
When the SS is even like, yeah, bro.
The SS was embarrassed to these guys.
Then right? You know that you're bad, doing some really depraved shit.
Some of them were.
It's, a, right? good, it's a good measuring
stick. Here is an example of what the 36th SS Waffen SS Panzer Waffen SS Grenadier Infantry did. They were in Poland. They were told to take a hospital, that they needed that hospital for German wounded. But it had a bunch of people in there that were hurt. Some of them hurt fighting the Germans. So they sent the 36th in there. The 36th killed every patient in the hospital by beating them to death with rifle butts and bayonets. And then the Red Cross nurses, they gang raped them. And when they were done with that, they hung them up by their feet and shot them in their bellies. So they died slowly for supposedly helping the enemy. They were just on a murderous, rampaging fucking wave of rape. The 36th was all about that because they were all out of prison and they weren't expected to survive their service anyway. So they really exclusively were set after civilians. They had amazing kill rates and very low casualty rates because they fought unarmed people. They were brutal. They were clearing out, what do you call them? Orphanages by going in there and stomping on little kids' heads. All right, boom, while they were alive. They wouldn't waste ammo on them. And that sounds like something out of a horror movie. You say, no way could that happen. An army couldn't do that. Well, it wasn't the German army. It wasn't the German army. It was these Einsatzgruppen, special action groups or task force. And some of them were recruited from prison. So they weren't fucking normal. Well, this movie's about these guys, different units of them. The German army has already moved through the area and cleared it of Russian military and the Russian army. And behind them was a wave of these Einsatzgruppen. And they were just doing unspeakable things to the civilians. And really, you start seeing it in the last part of this movie. And it looks bizarre. You're like, no way. That couldn't happen. This looks clownish. But evidently, that does fit the survivor's description, what they were doing.
Yeah, because this movie in particular... was co-written and directed by Elam Klimov, hopefully I'm pronouncing that sort of right, who actually he didn't make that many movies over his life, but he didn't make any movies after this because he had apparently said all he wanted to say, and that was like the mic drop, which, fair enough. But the co-writer was a man named Alice Adamovich, and he had actually co-written a book in the 70s where he gave his experiences and other survivors of this era and this location. And the book is called I Am From the Fiery Village. And so the kid that's in this movie is basically that guy's insert. Because that guy, the co-writer of the screenplay, was also about 14 years old, as the actor was in this, when he joined the partisans and fought the Nazis.
Yeah.
And so he's going on his own experience and the experience of other people that he knew and that he interviewed later on. And one of the reasons that the director said that he wanted to make this is because, you know, like I said, there have been a lot of war movies from different perspectives and things like that. But he's like, I feel like nobody had really made a movie about these people's stories, about all of the atrocities that took place. Like, nobody knew this. And we wanted to... Yeah. Preserve those people's memories and those people's experiences, because you don't hear that much about it.
Yeah, I mean, the soldiers...
And it's fucking awful.
Soldiers, conventional warfare, that gets a lot of the limelight. Because you can actually tell a damn cool story about soldiers fighting each other in different outfits.
Yeah, and I was going to say that I think it was Francois Truffaut, the director, that said that you can't really make an anti-war movie because war is inherently cinematic and it's always going to be like exciting and dramatic and everything. Yeah. Although, I will note, I did watch some other reviews of this and they said this might be the only true anti-war movie because it's not exaggerated, it's not a mission, it's not heroic, it's not anything like that. It's just showing this kid's experience.
Yeah, with his Einsatzgruppen.
And his like the way that he goes through these just couple of, it's not, it takes place like over only a few days or a few weeks really, and just his complete, like, just going into complete trauma, you know what I mean?
What's great about it is it shows the clusterfuckage of this, of this type of warfare. This isn't normal combined arms warfare we're talking about here. These units were mobile killing units, mobile murder units. They were like a mobile concentration camp, but there was no concentration. They just rounded you up, and it was a carnival-like atmosphere where all these dudes are drunk with guns.
And they're just laughing their asses off.
Laughing their asses off, raping people, playing games. You know, okay, you leave your children behind and we'll spare you. So we'll just kill your children. They're just cruel games. And really they have, and then they're playing these big loudspeakers. Hey, if you're any good, you have your papers together, we're going to rescue you and bring you back to Germany for safety and living in a civilized country and shit. They had no intention of doing that shit. They were killing people. If you, it was just basically, it was kind of like Mars Attack, where stop, we're your friends, you know what I mean? Where the fucking aliens are with the loudspeakers saying, we're your friends, you know? Yeah, that's what they were doing. And it was just, and then there was this weird aspects of in that German special action group were also Russians and I guess Ukrainians. Some of them were anti-communists who were helping them, other ones were just kind of like these clownish ass Russian guys who wanted to just betray Russia. So there was this,
or wanted to get their, like, let their ass not get killed,
or something. Siding with them to keep from getting killed, you know. So there's all this kind of like ambiguity about the honesty of everybody on every side, because even the Germans that are doing all the killing sometimes don't really seem to be too honest about it, you know. They're throwing up while they're doing it, you know, that kind of shit, some of them, which all matches with the actual facts. A lot of those guys that were in Einsatzgruppen were killing themselves, too. They'd be in the middle of slaughtering a bunch of civilians, you know, shooting women in the back of the head and shit, and then one of them guy would just, out of the blue, just blow his own head off. Just out of the blue, just start glitching out. So they, even the dudes that were doing this were upset by it. You know what I mean?
Fucking, well, that's something, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they had guys trying to wound themselves, so they had to get out of the duty. There was a lot of... That was really why the death camps were invented, because you could get that done in a death camp. You couldn't. These mobile killing units didn't actually work. There were too many psychological casualties.
Yeah, well, like I said, it's kind of like, I don't know, I'm kind of two minds about this, because I think one thing that this movie does really well at depicting is kind of like, on the one hand, under the wrong circumstances, could anyone do the shit that the Nazis did in this movie? I don't know if anyone could, but I kind of feel like most people could, given the right, like I said, or the wrong circumstances.
There's a lot of hatred.
And enough time to kind of propagandize them into it to dehumanize the other people, which they absolutely did.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I feel like a lot of people, too, it would take a lot of propagandizing, because, and the reason that it does is because most people are not inclined to that level of cruelty and that level of inhumanity. You can get most people to that point, I think, but it would take most people a long time to get them to that. And you'd have to really work on them psychologically. And I think some people, you could probably never bring them to that point. But I think most people probably
The main method that they used is they said that they were stopping the spread of communism, which was just more dangerous than anything. And that it was kind of like, being a communist was basically akin to being a slave. So they were trying to enslave the world. So they thought that kind of inferior type beta-ass people became communists. So they were kind of unfit to be in the gene pool. And they kind of used science, or what they knew of science, to justify what they're doing. Like, we don't want these people in the breeding population. And we want this land, and we don't want them on it. But at the same time, they were taking people who were Germanic-looking and sending them back to Germany. Because there were Germans and Germanic people, especially in places like Ukraine. Ukraine joined up and helped the Nazis. What's his name? Bandera. Joseph Bandera, I think what his name was. And he was kind of like a little mini Hitler. And to this day, all those guys in the Azov battalion who were just fighting the Russians a minute ago, we were supporting them. Nazis. Different. That's a neo-Nazi, not quite the same as the old Nazi, but Nazis nonetheless. So, And a lot of shit happened in Ukraine, kind of like it was even worse than this movie, where they were boiling people alive. Their version of a concentration camp was so bad that the guys that ran the German concentration camps went to go see it, and they said, we got to stop this. This is making us look bad. They were killing people in a carnival-like atmosphere. They were cutting little girls. That one German guy who was an officer who oversaw concentration camps and death camps was going to one of these Ukraine death camps. And come walking down the road was a 14-year-old girl with both of her arms cut off at the elbow. He said a spike shoved through her pelvis, nailed through her pelvis, and her eyes torn out. And she was walking. That's what they did to her in there. It didn't necessarily kill you. They'd maim you and let you go. Just, they had these special pots that they could put a lid on. It was like bars. And they'd fill it up with water and boil you alive if you were Jewish. And they'd make Jew soap. They'd sell it. They were fucking brutal, man. And even the Nazis didn't lower themselves to that. I mean, the Ukrainians were fucking tough, man.
The fact that anybody would even just come up with that to do to somebody. Like I said, and I when I was watching this movie last night, because, like I said, I've seen more, if you want to say, like, violent or graphic war movies. This one actually doesn't show a lot of things happening, but it shows a lot of aftermath. But in a way, I kind of think that makes it worse. You know what I mean? For me, like, it kind of made it worse. And I was thinking to myself while I was watching this movie, because this is one of those movies that is going to kind of make you think about humanity as a whole. And it's like, should we just be wiped out by an asteroid? But, you know what I mean? Probably. But I'm sitting there going, all the shit that happened in this, I was like, could I ever hate anyone enough to do the shit that these people were doing? I don't think I could. I don't think it's in me.
The most savage fighting, and I've studied a lot of warfare throughout the ages, the most savage fighting probably of all times would be some of the stuff that happened on some of those islands in between the Americans and the Japanese. It was savage fighting, but it was fighting. It was fighting between soldiers. There were very few civilians involved in a lot of that shit. But when it came to just pure savagery, human savagery and murder, the worst would be on the Eastern Front. It was just like,
I mean, this
apocalyptic,
yeah,
fight to the death. It was, and it was what was called a war of annihilation. The Germans did not want anything from the Russians. They wanted the Russians to die. There was no negotiation. It was just, we're going to come kill you and your civilians. The civilians were expressly tolerated or targeted because they were taking up room. They said, well, look, Germany's having a problem feeding itself right now. Russia has never been able to feed itself very well. So if we annex Russia, Germany will never be able to feed Russia. So we have to depopulate Russia. That's what we have to do.
That's what we're trying to do.
That's what they came at. That was their solution. So the army just kind of fought through the civilians, fought past them. They killed some of them, but they mostly were just chasing the Soviet army. And then behind them were these Einsatzgruppen and just murdering civilians. And making an attempt to go through them, if they found anybody that looked Germanic, cute girls, blondes, or whatever, they might send them back to her. They might send them back to Germany. They would take little children back to Germany if they were blonde with blue eyes. Because they would assume that they were, in some places, they could assume they were Germanic.
Yeah, Xanad is saying, the kid is shell-shocked halfway through the movie. He's just a passive observer.
Yeah.
It's like, the movie is beautiful. I've watched it 4 times. Yeah, the cinematography in this is gorgeous. I've actually seen it compared to Stanley Kubrick, just in the way that he does a lot of those one-point perspective kind of close-up shots of people looking directly into the camera, like, for a particular, like, he does a lot of that, but I kind of feel like he does a lot of really good use of, like, Steadicam and stuff, too. It really, the movie's, like, really immersive. Yeah. It kind of makes you feel like you're in it.
That's who she's talking about?
He's
a 14-year-old boy.
Alexei Kravchenko was the actor's name. He had never been in a movie before this, and he was 14.
And by the time this movie's at its edge, he looks like he's about a 50-year-old man.
He looks like
an
old man.
Like an old
which
man.
Is fucked up, because it was what they did. So, like I said, he's like, I wanted somebody that was from that area that was not an actor, just like a 14-year-old boy, because that's about how old, like I said, the co-writer was. So they wanted him to be the insert. So they get this kid. They were kind of worried that all the stuff they were going to put him through in the movie was going to, like, fuck him up, like, psychologically.
Could they shoot at him with guns, for real guns.
Yeah, they use live ammo for this, too.
It's a hardcore movie. They shoot a damn cow, and I said, man, that was live ammo. It turned out it was right.
Yeah.
He was walking behind it, and it gets killed. By a burst of machine gun round fire. And I saw the surprise on the damn cow's face and the way the fucking skin moved.
Yeah, they really shot that cow.
That was a real rifle shot.
They really did shoot that cow.
Yeah, he shot the cow, killed it.
Yep. This movie is not fucking around.
No.
It is not fucking around.
Now, this is 1985, Soviet Union. This is a communist propaganda movie, but it's a good one. It doesn't have to stretch the fucking truth too far. It's not real laden with a bunch of political lines. It's like an indie flick. It feels like a real good art
film. It's an art film. And to be honest, even the partisans, they don't really show them doing anything specifically horrific, but they don't really make them like good guys either.
They never really say anything about communism either.
You know?
Only the Germans talk about communism.
Anyway. Right. So, and I don't think, I mean, the stuff that the Germans did in this was just, like, it wasn't exaggerated, you know what I mean? It's like, they didn't make them, like, cartoon villains or anything like that.
There was only one scene I didn't understand. It looked like there was in the Einsatzgruppen is a German female officer, which I don't think that's historically accurate. I don't think they'd send any German females into the Eastern Front. And she ends up dying. They show her dying. It looks like she was tied to the side of a motorcycle with a sidecar, with her breasts out and shit, and a dead dude with her, and she's gasping for air, and I don't know exactly what happened to her. They didn't show her that much. I don't know if
she was eating like some lobster earlier, but the thing about it is that
the partisans rape and kill her.
I don't know.
Is that what it was?
They just kind of left that ambiguous. Yeah. And the thing about this movie, too, is that even though, and this is going to sound like a weird thing to say, but even though it is very realistic, I mean, they used actual uniforms, you know, that people had actually worn. They used actual everything. Like I said, they used live ammo, and they used everybody, like people from that area.
Guns. You know?
And everything
carrying around a Russian SVT rifle.
Right. So it's just kind of like, so they did that, but it also has like a veneer of fairy tale to it, like a little bit of surrealism. I think that scene with the German, with the female officer, like eating the lobster in the truck, and then like later on, I think that's the same woman, like you see dead. I think that might be, because here's the thing.
He's hallucinating.
Yeah, you're seeing the whole thing through the subjective point of view of this kid, whose name is Fliora. And it's like, so you're seeing the whole thing through his perspective as he's going through, like, all of this fucking trauma and horror. And so I think at times, some of the stuff you're seeing is not meant to be taken literally, maybe. Because you remember, like, the scene where I was saying before, like, where him and that woman from the, or that girl from the partisans who was working as a nurse or whatever, Glasha. And when they were out in the woods, like before all the German bombs started falling on them, and there was like a stork, right, that came in and that seemed like it was following them. And I said, that's got to be symbolic of something. So I looked it up. And apparently like a white stork like that is like the symbol of Belarus. And if you see them like that, it's supposed to be like a bad omen.
Yeah.
So that's why that was put in there.
Yeah, the girl in the movie is quite cute. She's also crazy, so bad shit has happened to her. But they have a good, nice scene where she gets on top of a little bucket or something and does one of the coolest little dances. You would think that it almost looked modern, but I did remember seeing them do little Russian jigs that they were doing.
Yeah,
like that. Yeah. How old was she? 16, 17, maybe.
Probably. I think she was only supposed to be a little bit older than Fliora was.
Yeah,
and he was 14.
Somebody said that she was going to be taken back to Germany, but somebody rescued her. Now, she's blonde and blue eyes. I think maybe the Germans were going to take her back, and she somehow got rescued.
Maybe.
Because that was part of their program, was to take Germanic children and send them back to Germany. Because, you know, the Germans had a population problem. There weren't enough Germans. If you're trying to take over the world, or all of Europe, they wanted all of the Russian continent. If you're going to take over that, you better have a lot of people to fill it, or you won't be able to occupy it. And just too many Germans were being killed, and not enough of them were being born. There just weren't enough Germans. I mean, shit, that country's the size of Mississippi, maybe. It had a bigger population, but it's little.
Yeah, Xana said, even when the Russians are killing the Nazis at the end, it's morally ambiguous. It's not a heroic scene or anything. Yeah, it's not. Really, the only thing that you could argue puts them above the Nazis is that at first, you know, they capture all of these Nazis, the partisans do, and it's kind of hilarious because some of them are Russians, too, that were working with the Nazis. So they captured them, and it's funny how quickly most of them turned on each other, being like, I didn't make that order, that was him, and like all this other. And there's really only one very like, who looks like the classic Nazi, looks like very Aryan. And he's the only one, I know this is going to sound fucked up, but the only one that actually has the strength of his conviction to be like, yeah, we're going to kill all you motherfuckers, that's what we're going to do. Like, so he's the only one that's not a coward that like stands up and sticks to his convictions.
Yeah, the commander was just soft as fuck.
As monstrous and as
he,
they are.
Yeah, he tried to talk his way out of it.
So, but what was going to happen was that, and Pleura was like right there, is like, I'm going to make this guy, the commander that was like, oh, I'm not even with these people, I'm going to make him pour gasoline all over the other ones and we're going to set him on fire. And Pleura brings the gasoline over and is like, there you go. And so they pour gasoline, but then, you know, the Russians just shoot him, like just gun him down, and then they put the fire out. So it's like, they massacre them all, obviously. But they're like, well, we're not going to go that one step farther and burn everyone alive, just like they did to the village, like all these women and children in the village.
Now, I could say at this part of the war, the Russians were the good guys. They were defending themselves. They were on their own fucking land, and they were fucking attacked without any warning by people who they thought were their allies. The Germans had betrayed them. So they had every right to just kill every single one of them that fucking was on their fucking territory, especially with what they had been doing. Where it kind of went the other way, where it kind of slid into where the Russians were the bad guys, is when they got strong enough to fucking invade Germany. They had a pretty good army at the front, all right? But behind them, they had other groups that were kind of like the German Einsatzgruppen. They had a bunch of dudes that were released from prison. They were kind of like rear echelon security. And according to basically every German female, every Russian female that was in that army, they said that basically they were an army of rapists. The Russians raped every woman they saw. Evidently, there were times where there were piles of dead German women had been collected up and they were deposited at the ends of roads, the streets in which they lived. Now, the one interpretation is that after the sexual assaults, they were killing themselves. That's probably might have been, or some of them were killing themselves out of fear. But according to Russian female witnesses that were in the Russian army and in some of these rear echelon groups, it just said that there was just brutal campaigns of rape. In reprisal for what these Einsatzgruppens did. So here's the thing. You're not morally superior when you fucking take on the same tactics as your enemy.
Well, that's what I was kind
of. That's the problem.
That's kind of what I was trying to get into, like with, because one of the messages of this movie, I don't know if like the reason that it's called "Come and See," that's from the Book of Revelation, and they changed the title of that later. Initially, he was just going to call it "Kill Hitler," but he didn't mean that. I've seen snippets of interviews with the director about this movie. And he said, I didn't mean that literally, like Hitler the person. He's like, what I meant was that you have to kill that evil within yourself. And so the very famous last scene where Fleora is shooting the picture of Hitler and then they're showing the actual real footage of Hitler like running in reverse. And the kid just keeps shooting at the picture. But then when he gets back to Hitler as a baby, like, he can't shoot it. You know what I mean? Because that kind of goes back to that old moral conundrum. Like, if you, you know, could go back in time and smother baby Hitler or whatever, like, would you do it? And so it kind of goes back to that. But they're kind of just showing that despite everything that's happened to him. Well, I think that last scene is twofold. It's showing that, like, what everything that's happened to him, you know, he's aged however much. Because, like I said, the kid looks, they shot this over 9 months. And the kid went on a starvation diet and all this other kind of... They did terrible things to this kid, you know what I mean? Like, for him to be in this movie. And he looks like an old man at the end of this movie. Because he looks like a 14-year-old kid at the beginning. He's like, woo, I'm going to fight the Nazis. Like, he's all excited about it. Like, it's going to be super cool. And then by the end, he looks like a 50-year-old man.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like...
A rough 50-year-old
man. A rough 50-year-old man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he looks terrible. It's horrifying. Yeah. But yeah, so, but the last scene meaning, well, he at least has enough of his humanity that he couldn't kill a baby, unlike the Nazis who do that in this movie. But I think it also goes to show, like, by showing the stuff in reverse, that it's like, you can't, as much as you might want a reverse history, or you can't do it. Like, it's, you can't unfuck what's already fucked.
Yeah. Although he did lose his empathy even for the Russian girl that he had a crush on.
That wasn't the same girl.
Oh, wasn't the same girl?
No, that wasn't the same girl. No, that wasn't Glasha.
Okay.
That was the girl that, you remember when the Nazis were burning the barn with all those people in it?
Yeah.
And that girl that they, that woman that they dragged out by her hair?
Yeah.
And then they threw her in the back of a truck to get gang raped.
That was the truck girl.
Okay. That was that woman.
Oh, okay. All right.
That was that girl.
So that's
so that wasn't Glasha. You didn't see Glasha again after.
Okay, I got you. I thought it was Glasha.
No, you're just led to assume that she was still with the surviving villager.
So she had to go through that in order to survive.
And that, and I mean that fucking scene with him like looking at her, and she walks up with that whistle in her mouth.
Yeah.
And it's just like blood running down the inside of her legs and shit like that, because you'd seen her screaming and being hauled into this truck with all of these.
Didn't they kill her baby?
What? No, they they threw the baby back. They chucked the baby back into the barn.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and then they burned everyone alive.
Okay, what we're talking about is that the
Einsatz, what's happening in the movie. We haven't even said what happened in the movie.
One of their main things, the easiest way they found, the most cost effective way to wipe out a town, is that once you got the people together that you wanted to kill, you ran them into a church or a large building, and then you locked them in there. And they played games with them sometimes over times, but then eventually you set the building on fire. And then you machine gun anybody that jumps out. But just kind of like I read before, they weren't real strict on the people that they would let go. They would just let some people go. If they just didn't feel like killing them, or maybe something about them, the Germans were just like, no, we're going to let this one go. Maybe she was a cute girl. We might just, let's just use her up and we'll let her go, you know. They might do that, too. It's like what they did to that one woman. But they killed her baby, too.
Yeah, they chucked her baby
back. So if they did something real heinous to you, sometimes they just let you go.
Because maybe they thought it was funnier, like, to let you live with the shit.
There was, because
that's horrible.
I also remember seeing old stories of girls being captured by Germans, and the Germans just let them go. Said, you better go down and hide. They did that, too. Some dude, you know what I mean, just as long as they didn't, nobody saw them do that. You know what I mean? Because there was peer pressure going on in those units. So the horror of this angle of tribal warfare is how random and unpredictable it is. It's basically a carnival of carnage has rolled into your town. That's what's happening.
And I think that this movie does a really good job of portraying that.
And they may or may not kill
honestly.
You. They're probably going to kill you. Yeah.
Xana said there's a famous double focus shot at the end. Jenny probably knows what it's called. Yeah, it's called, oh shit, I just knew it, and I had it on the tip of my tongue, but then I forgot what it was. Some kind of like a lens. I know how they do it. It's like a lens that's split in the middle, and it's basically where, what is it called? Something like that. But it's just like, it's a shot where the thing in the foreground and the thing in the background are both in focus at the same time. There's a couple famous shots in this movie that have that. And one of them has the girl that got gang raped, like, in the extreme foreground. And then you see Pleora, like, in the background. And they're both in focus at the same time. There's a couple famous shots in this that have that that thing. Split diopter. So I kind of sort of got it right. I figured Zach would know what it was. But, yeah, so, I mean, just, okay, so, like, for a brief plot rundown of this, if you haven't seen it, like I said, this isn't the most, because somebody said earlier, like, Hollywood would never make this, because I do kind of feel like a lot of American war films, like I said, even if they have tragedy and they're graphic and everything like that, like Saving Private Ryan or Schindler's List or something like that, which are, you know, really good movies, but there's always this kind of, one, there's always kind of, like, a mission, you know, that they're kind of going toward, like, a three-act structure type of thing. And there's also, like, an underlying heroism. It seems like a lot less morally ambiguous. Like I said, this one is not like a traditional war movie in the sense that you're not really seeing big battle scenes or you're not really seeing anything like that. You're just seeing everything from the point of view of this 14-year-old kid who at the beginning, decides he wants to join the Partisans because, like I said, thinks it's going to be a big adventure because he's 14 years old and he doesn't know any better. And then, like, as the time goes on, like, he actually gets more and more shell-shocked and, like, dehumanized by all of the stuff that he sees occurring. Like, you know, his family gets killed and all this other kind of shit. And it's just kind of by the end, there's almost like nothing left. Like the way he's looking into the camera, like he's almost like not in there anymore, you yeah. know? And you know that he's just like never going to be the same because of all of the shit.
He's
and
got
like
PTSD. He's yeah. been rewired by all this.
And like I said, honestly, this kid, the fact that he was not an actor and he was only 14.
Yeah.
The kid's facial expressions in this are fucking horrifying.
Yeah.
I have never seen anything like it.
Now, this movie is a work of art. It's an art flick.
Yeah.
It's a war movie, but not a war movie showing conventional forces. This is no. unconventional shit. And this is an Eastern Front. It's a little bit more to the heart of what war is, kind of like in Apocalypse Now. You know,
yeah, a lot of people do kind of compare this to Apocalypse Now.
Where
it's similar.
War is not this big mechanized battle between... That's one part of it, but real war is savage, brutal tribal warfare, and it's about genocide. If it's not genocide, it's not real war. Real war is about just wiping out another people so there's nothing left over. And that's what was happening on the Eastern Front. That was real war. No quarter given. Civilians targeted. Children and women targeted. Yeah. They hated each other. This may well be a bunch of headhunters or back in caveman days. You know what I mean? That's what they were doing.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the brutality of what you're seeing. Yeah. And in some ways, even though they don't show a lot of the stuff except in the aftermath, in some ways that kind of makes it worse because you're kind of just like left to imagine like that's what happened. Like Xanata said, at the end, he walks away with the Partisans, which is meant to tell you his story is just one story of many. Yeah, and it also, you know, serves to tell you, because after the whole, like, you know, iconic shooting at the picture of Hitler thing, like, there's another little coda where he runs back and gets back in with the Partisans, and it just goes to show, it's like, well, all of this happened, but the war's not over. It kept going.
It's just one of the different layers of war. The conventional guys got their tanks and their vehicles and their Hollywood war, they're fighting that. The civilians and all the special operation guys are fucking hanging each other with piano wire, methodically raping fucking the enemy females and fucking killing their children and burning them in fucking bad shit, like something out of damn Rwanda, like a damn tribal African warfare where you're killing people you kind of know or you're sitting right there in front of them, you know what I mean, and killing their whole families. That's what real war is. Horrible. Horrible.
And I could not imagine like doing that to anybody. But like I said, I don't think I'm going to hate anybody.
True hatred.
To do
and,
that.
And even America doesn't know anything like that. We've never had real warfare on our own soil. Even the American Civil War wasn't that bad. There was some of that going on, but it wasn't really widespread. The Eastern Front was fucking widespread, man. It was genocide.
And another thing, genocide. Too, I was watching kind of a philosophical discussion about this movie, and it was kind of talking, and I think I've said this before because we talk a lot about serial killers and stuff like that, and I said in some ways I think it's easier for quote-unquote normal people who don't do horrific things like as seen in this movie or that serial killers do, is that it's very easy to again other somebody like that person's a monster, that person is inhuman, but it's a lot harder to think that maybe all humans have a capacity to do this kind of shit, and maybe it would be better for us to acknowledge that.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
So I kind of feel like this movie, just not, you know, not directly, but I think maybe kind of as an underlying theme, I did kind of get that feeling from this movie, that it was kind of trying to get you to see that it's like these, you know, these Nazis are doing monstrous things, obviously chucking babies into a barn and then setting it on fire, and there's hundreds of people in there and they're all screaming
and they think it's funny.
And they just think it's funny.
Yeah, that it's justified.
And you're watching them and just being like, you're a monster. You're like not a human, but they are. They are.
Human beings.
And a lot of them were just regular ass people.
Yep.
So I kind of feel like I really feel like it behooves us to maybe confront the fact that most people have that capacity in them, and that acknowledging that is maybe the first step to combating that.
Most of the Einsatzgruppen were recruited from German police, regular local cops, city cops. And then a lot of them were also kind of like desk cops, cops that were in just typed up reports and shit. And they ended up going into those units thinking that it was a good way out of the war. You know what I mean? Well, at least I'm not going to be, you know, getting shot at. I'm going to be doing the rear echelon shit. They had no idea that this is what it was. That it was to depopulate Russia.
Yeah.
They didn't really volunteer for it.
But a lot of them
went... But they got them into it.
I mean, a lot of them went along with
it. They got them into it, yeah.
So.
Yeah. So... Under the right circumstances, now, you know, Germany came out of a lot of poverty and a damn near a civil war between Russians, between communists and national socialists inside Germany. They had a lot of hatred and resentment built up on them against a bunch of different people. So I guess it was just lashing out. That's why I want to see this new A24 movie that's going to be coming out called Civil War. You know, in the trailer, they got an American soldier saying, oh, you're an American? Well, what kind of American are you? That's kind of similar to what was going on. And these were all Europeans. But what kind of European were you? And you had Germans going through there saying there's only going to be certain kinds of Europeans. You know? And damn.
Which, like I said, I'm pretty chill with anybody as long as they don't fuck me. You know what I mean?
They had enough, man. They were sick of this shit. Fucking, they were going to... This is, you know, in their minds, they are fully justified that they have the power of life and death over civilians from another country because they're just sick of you.
I can't even remember who it was that said it, but I mean, and I see this a lot because it's like they also often give it as advice to writers, particularly if you're writing horror or sci-fi or something like that. They're just like, keep in mind to write a good villain that a villain is always the hero in their own story.
Yeah.
And that's probably true of most human villains also.
Yeah,
Thank you very much. Murder Hornet has rejoined the YouTube membership program.
There you go. Thank you very much. He's giving showing us some flashbulbs. Yeah, you can't do what the Germans were doing unless you think you're right.
Yeah.
And they said that.
I mean, if they just like came up to you and said, hey, why don't you go throw a bunch of babies into a barn and set it on fire and then, you know, put it full of gunfire and shit like that.
Yeah.
It's like most people be like, no, I'm not going to do that. But if you have propagandized them up to the point where it's like, well, these aren't even people and...
Yeah, or they're wrong.
Wrong and they're bad or something like that, then you won't have a problem doing it. A lot of people wouldn't. And like I said, that a lot of them even just thought it was hilarious. They were all just like drinking like it was a big fucking party or something.
The Germans of that era, the ones that had bought into the party line, believed that communists, Slavs, Jews and gypsies were bad people. That they were bad. They were just, you couldn't have them in a society. So, they were going to get rid of them. And you got to have a holier than thou mentality, man, for that. You really got to believe in that. And they were calling, it was almost like a religious movement. They're calling themselves true believers and shit like that, you know, in their speeches and the faithful. Even though it's a secular religion, but it's, they had convinced themselves that they knew what they were doing.
So let's talk about, so here's one thread that kind of runs throughout the movie. Like I said, we haven't, like, given a plot synopsis or anything like that, but, you know, I guess you can go on Wikipedia or whatever. But at the very beginning of the movie, the very opening scene of the movie, matter of fact, has Fleora and his younger friend digging on the beach looking for weapons because they are excited and they want to go join the partisans, right? And the village elder comes and tells them to quit doing that because they're going to get the Germans' attention. Now, you do see that after the kids find some guns that are, like, buried on the beach. I guess it was a battle there or something at some earlier stage. And so they find them, and then you see, like, a German spy plane flying overhead. Now, later on in the movie, after Fleora, you know, goes back to his village and finds that his mother and his twin sisters, or his two little sisters, have been killed, have been slaughtered... and he goes to find the surviving villagers, and the village elder has been covered in gasoline and set on fire, but he is still alive, barely. And he tells Fleora, I told you you shouldn't have dug that gun up, or something to that effect. And after that, Fleora feels like he tries to kill himself because he thinks this is all his fault. So to what extent do you think that this was actually all the kid's fault? I don't think it was.
It wasn't the kid's fault. I think he hallucinated. They got
but he thought, no, because, well, he did see the plane while he was digging the thing up. The plane did see, and then it was shortly after that that they were kind of like, oh, the Germans were like, oh, there's some kids with guns down there. Maybe we should look, and there's some partisan activity in this area. But I kind of feel like maybe that would have happened anyway. But I think that his guilt that he thought that he had caused the whole thing was another aspect of him, like, his kind of...
So did the burn-up guy really tell him that?
Apparently, yeah.
Okay.
He really did tell him that.
I thought he was hallucinating that the guy...
I don't think so.
I thought that was his conscious...
I mean, it might have been, but I mean, the guy did tell him at the very, very beginning of the movie, don't do that, like, you'll draw the Germans' attention. Like, the planes go over and they can see you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they would have gone in there anyway.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I'm just saying that the kid was 14.
Right.
And... You know, so he might have thought, oh, shit, this is all my fault.
No, there was no way to go get out of what they were doing on the Eastern Front. No, the Germans came and did that. That was just kind of standard operating procedure.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that that's like another, like his guilt about thinking that he caused the entire...
Their mission was to depopulate Germany. That's what the stated mission was.
Well, not Germany. They weren't.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Was the Germany's mission was to depopulate Russia.
Yeah.
That's what they had decided that before the mission ever started. Yeah.
Yeah,
the record is there.
Xanadu said the plane is also significant because every time he sees it, it foreshadows a bad event. Yeah, that's exactly right. And actually, I saw this one breakdown that argued...
It's not a German plane, though. That's the funny thing about it. Did you know that?
Well, no, but I...
Okay. What did they argue?
That argued that, that the movie, because the title is from... the Book of Revelation, about somebody's like seeing the four horsemen of the apocalypse, essentially. That the movie is kind of like broken into four parts, and each part is predicated on them seeing that plane.
Okay.
And then something really bad happening afterward.
Okay, in the movie, the plane looks like a model plane, and it looks like a model of a P-38 Lightning, which is an American plane, not German. I think the Russians just used that plane because they had a model of it, and it did kind of look German, but that was an American plane.
It was supposed to be...
It was probably supposed to be a German
according plane. According to the notes that I, or the research that I did, it's supposed to be an FW-189.
A Focke-Wulf 189?
Reconnaissance airplane.
Okay, let me look at the Focke-Wulf 189.
That's what that plane's supposed to be.
Because that was a dual fuselage airplane. I didn't remember the Germans even having that.
Yeah, Xana said this movie is just fucking awesome. I love that it was in Russian, but it's super easy to follow. Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's not difficult to follow at all. Like I said, it does have a slight, like, fairy tale veneer. I don't want to go too far in that direction because it is, like, super realistic. But it does have a little bit of surrealism. It's just in the sense that you're seeing things subjectively from the point of view of a 14-year-old kid who might or might not have a real good handle on stuff.
Okay, yeah, it's a Focke-Wulf 189.
Yeah.
And it looks just like a P-38 Lightning.
Yeah, that's it.
It looked like a P-38 Lightning. I didn't know the Germans had that.
Like I said, it would surprise me if they had fucked that up, because everything about this was very, very accurate.
Yeah, that's what the silhouette looked like. They were showing it from the bottom up, and I was like, man, that's a P-38 Lightning. Okay, no, there was a reconnaissance plane they had. Okay, I didn't know about that one.
Yeah.
Focke-Wulf 189. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah, that's, I know.
Yeah, that's it. Little bitty engines on that thing.
Yeah, Xana said, it's surrealism for sure. I watched this stoned and it tripped me up. Yeah, I could see how. Like I said, it's not crazy or like over the top or anything like that, but just the way that it's shot, like I said, I've seen it compared to like Stanley Kubrick a little bit, because this was all, they didn't use any, I don't believe they used any like, lighting either. It was all natural lighting because they wanted it to look as realistic as possible. So, you know, like I said, they went a long way toward trying to make this as accurate as they could make it. Dana said Jenny wrote down the plane model.
Yeah. She's not a checker.
Well, yeah. See, I've known you a long time, and it's just kind of like, so I'm like, yeah, I better
write. I gotta know the details.
Yeah, I got to write everything down, so, like...
Well, you guys can see how I could confuse it as a fucking P-38. Mm-hmm. That looked like, from the silhouette they were showing it up in the air, it looked like a P-38 Lightning. And I was like, man, that's not a German plane, it's an American plane. But no, I didn't know that they had a. I never saw the Focke Wulf.
Yeah, see, reconnaissance today plane. I learned.
Yeah, and it's reconnaissance plane, so that makes sense. A little yeah. spy plane.
Yeah, so yeah. like every time you see the spy plane, you know yeah. some bad shit's like right. about to go down because like they're watching. You know right. what I mean? And that was another thing that several reviewers pointed out, that the way this is shot. Actually, one review, I saw this one really good, like very in-depth review of it. And the kid, I mean, he looked like a kid to me. I don't know how old the reviewer was, but he looked like very, very young. But he was very articulate. And he knew all about the history and everything because he gave like a context of the history of what was really going on and what this movie was about and stuff. And he was saying that this is a war film, but it's shot like a horror movie. And what he meant was, he's like, some of the scenes are maybe even reminiscent of like Evil Dead, you know what I mean, where the camera's like following, and he's like or like The Shining, because the camera is always like following the characters, giving you the impression that there's this larger entity that's always watching you or like always behind you. And I think that was one of the things that made this movie feel so immersive, or like feel like you were really there, is you always got the sense. And I really like that they shot it like that too, because it gave the sense of you being in the same boat as the characters, because, you know, here's the German army coming in. They couldn't really see them for a long time. They don't really show up until like the third act of the movie. Like, you see the spy plane and you see their bombs and you know they get shot at and stuff like that, but you don't see them until later, and then they all kind of come in. And but the fact that the way that it's shot makes you feel like that you're always being watched by them, and it's this huge, you know, entity that you can't really do anything about, that you're like powerless against. So yeah. I think that was a really good choice of like how to shoot it like that, because it makes the whole thing like really unsettling. You always feel like they're watching you even when you don't see them, you know? Xanada said, I'm glad you guys liked this, because I thought maybe you wouldn't. Jenny, did you feel like it had a horror movie vibe to it at times? Yeah, that's what yeah. I was just saying. It really did seem like it was shot like a horror movie.
Yeah, he said it. He thought it was P-38. It looked like a P-38, too. Here's the thing. In one scene, that plane flies over, and then an artillery strike fucking happens, which that's normal. I'm like, well, the plane was spotting for the artillery. But they released four paratroopers. Can that Focke Wulf plane, did it have paratroopers in it? Could
yeah,
it
drop
four guys?
I don't know.
Because the way they shot it, that plane went over, and then they showed four parachutes in the sky. And those guys hit the ground, and they were doing a recon.
And one of them got stuck in the tree, cutting himself down and stuff.
That would be kind of badass if that little fucking Focke Wulf spy plane could drop paratroopers. That makes sense, because recon scouts are also artillery spotters, and they're also doing reconnaissance, and that's a recon plane. So I guess maybe they carried recon scouts with them. They could drop them off.
So I'm guessing that's what those were.
So I guess that's what they were trying to say, yeah.
And they really did blow up all the forest around those actors.
Yeah.
They really did do all
some of that shit.
They really shot at them. They
some
really
of that
did
shit
do all
did look like 20mm cannon fire fucking cutting those trees.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah, okay.
Like I said, they did all of that for real.
I saw a circle with splinters on it appear out of one of those fucking trees, big round. Yeah. Man, it looks real. That's the way it really looks.
It is.
Yeah. I've seen all that shit before.
Like I said, this movie did not fuck around.
Yeah.
It was all real shit. I don't think anything was fake.
Yeah.
20. Other than, I know that there's an urban legend around this movie that the 14-year-old actor, that his hair really did turn gray. You know what I mean? Like, after this movie, because it was so stressful. That is actually not quite true. What is true is that the dye they used toward the end, like, to make his hair look silver, like his hair had grayed, actually wouldn't come out. So he did actually have gray hair for a while after this, but it wasn't natural. It was just the dye. It wouldn't come out. But that's all. But that kind of helped fuel the legend around the movie, that it, like, traumatized the actor so much that his hair actually went gray, but it actually didn't. But the thing about it, I don't know what they did with the makeup at the end, because, like I said, I know the kid, they did kind of put him on a starvation diet, and they did all this other stuff, and they shot it over 9 months, and they shot it chronologically because they wanted him to go from looking like a fresh-faced 14-year-old boy to, like I said, at the end, he looks like he does on the beginning, on the cover of that thing. He looks like an old man, like a rough 50-year-old man. And so I don't know how much that was makeup, but it doesn't look like makeup, I'm going to say. I mean, he looks like absolute hell at the end of this movie. And I think that's one of the things that makes it that much more devastating, because it doesn't look fake.
It's a great flick. I recommend it. If you like Apocalypse Now, you'd like this. It's a Soviet war kind of, it's a Soviet kind of war propaganda type movie that is kind of like an art film and like a low budget Apocalypse Now. And just because it's low budget doesn't mean it's not any good. It's just that they're working with a smaller budget, but it's effective, real effective.
And everything in
it, they're really killing animals,
is real.
They really shot that cow. Well, they really cut a cow's head off in fucking
That's Apocalypse what I was going to say. Apocalypse Now, they really did cut that cow's head
You can
off,
get so. Away with it if it's food animals, and as long as it's fucking kind of done in a certain way. Even though I don't think you could shoot a cow in an American film.
I do not think that would be allowed nowadays.
Yeah, no. Not allowed. Not nowadays. And I'm pretty sure they shot a horse, because I saw in the distance a bunch of destroyed vehicles.
Oh, right, yeah, I remember
and a
that.
A horse having spasms with the back legs, you know, and I'm from the horse industry, and that looked like death throes.
It did, yeah.
Of an animal.
And that wasn't even, like, in the main foreground.
No,
that was just kind of like
a horse kicking.
Like I said, like an aftermath kind of
and
shot.
I was like, man, they shot a horse.
Yeah. They probably did.
And there was a bunch of wreckage, you know.
But yeah, I mean, fucked up. Honestly, I was going to say, I think the most shocking scene for me was not, I mean, because I guess by the time you get to the third act, where you get to the Nazis all gathering around and herding all those people into the barn and setting it on fire, like throwing grenades in there and shit, like by that point, you already know like something terrible is going to happen. But I think like, because for the first 40 odd minutes, something like that, it's just kind of like the kid and he's kind of going to the camp and getting acclimated and meeting Glasha and all this other stuff. But then when he goes back to, like, after he kind of gets left behind, all the other partisans go on the march, and they're like, hey, you're just a kid, you just got here, like, you stay behind. And Glasha obviously stays behind, too, she's just, like, a nurse or whatever. And it's like, so he gets upset, and he goes off into the woods, and then him and Glasha have a thing, and then he sees the plane, the spy plane overhead, and then the bombs start hitting. So they kind of, like, run, and then he ends up going back to his village, and they go in his house. And you can tell that whatever happened to this village just happened, because he's like, oh, look, my mom made soup and it's still like it was still warm.
Yeah.
But then like all his sister's dolls are on the floor and there's all these flies in there and all this other kind of shit. So you're like, man, everybody's dead. But for a while, like he doesn't really seem to want to accept that. Like he's kind of,
yeah,
I think he kind of knows deep down, but he doesn't want to, he's like, no, I know just where they went. You know what I mean? But then there's a fucking horrible, but also like fantastic scene where he's like, I know where they went. I know where they went. And he goes running out of the house and Glasha runs after him and she looks back over her shoulder and there's all these dead people.
Yeah, they're all lined up where they got massacred.
Lined up where they got massacred against the side of a thing. That's like, they all got shot. Like, they all got lined up and got shot. Like, almost all the villagers. She looks back and sees that.
But he didn't see it.
And then she just keeps... Yeah, he doesn't see it, but it's because she's, like, behind him. And she's, like, running. And she doesn't tell him right away.
Yeah.
And then they kind of go to this bog because he's going over. He's like, they're all at this island. I know they're there.
Yeah.
And they go through, they're like struggling through this fucking gluey ass bog and all this other shit. And then like they get to the other side and then she's finally like, they're all dead. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like she tells them and then he just pushes her in the fucking water. But it's just like that moment where she turns around and there's all those dead. It was like, that fucked me up.
Glasha's an interesting character. I like her. She's kind of a good natured girl. She's real pretty. Got a nice figure and everything, and she's blonde, blue-eyed. And there's a couple scenes where you're like, what the fuck is going on here? In one scene, the commander and her are having these knowing glances. And I was like, is she fucking the commander?
I wasn't sure, because she's all dressed up.
Yeah.
And then she runs off and cries in the woods, because that's where Fleora finds her and thinks he's not coming back. And he even kind of teases her about why you're so dressed up or whatever, but they never address that.
Yeah.
Now, I saw somebody else talking about this movie, and they seemed to think that she was the commander's daughter.
And he was trying to save her?
But, yeah, which I guess that could be the case,
too. I thought maybe he didn't want her and the boy to get killed, so he was leaving them behind.
Yeah.
That they were too new. And another scene where Glasha's walking around and a bunch of guys are following behind her, like in a little parade,
like trying to give her flowers and stuff.
With a bunch of gifts, and then they kind of disappear, and I'm like, are they gang banging? And it sounds crazy, but no, that was going on in the Second World War. Girls were having sex with soldiers en masse before they were going off to war to die. That would happen.
Yeah, so I didn't know if that was what the implication was.
And I thought maybe they were implying that she was having sex with guys before they died. Because she didn't expect any of them to come back.
And she was one of the few, like, young women at the camp.
Yeah, so she's kind of like being the USO in a way. You know? But that was just kind of left out there. You don't know.
And I wasn't sure, like I said, it was weird because when the commander was giving the talk, like, to everybody before they went on the march, and she was over there, like, in a really pretty, like, green dress, like, she was all dressed up, and they kept, like, looking at each other really significantly, and then she kind of ran off into the woods, and when the kid finds her, she's kind of crying, and I was like, did they have a thing, or was she, like, pregnant, or something? Like, I wasn't really sure, like, what that...
I'm pretty sure she was giving them boys love before they were going off to die.
I mean, maybe so, yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe that would have been more obvious to, like, in context, or, like, you know, people that were around at that time, like, maybe that would have... But, I mean, that's kind of what I thought, but I wasn't really sure if that's what they were implying or not.
Then they were backing that up in her interactions with the guys, that she was... virginal, and she wanted to be a mother and have children and children.
Yeah.
Which, they were letting you know that this was fucking very extreme circumstances. Fucking everybody was being slaughtered.
Yeah.
Around, you know.
And they kind of knew, they seemed to have gotten to a thing where it's like they kind of knew that they could be slaughtered at any moment,
Yeah. So, that was how I took that character. And I thought she was a great character.
She was a very good character. Yeah, yeah. But see, the reason that... Because we were confused at first because, like, at the end, like, when Floria sees that other woman that with the blood down her legs and everything like that looking all fucked up, and for a second we thought that was Glasha.
Yeah.
But then I was, like, looking at her, I'm like, that's not Glasha because the second woman had bangs.
Okay, yeah.
And Glasha didn't. Her hair was just kind of straight and long on both sides. And another thing, I got confused for a second because Floria says to her, you know, to love and to have children and stuff, which is the conversation that he'd had with Glasha, like, earlier in the movie. So I was just kind of like... But I guess he was just making a general statement, like, yeah, that's not going to happen for you ladies, sorry. But, that was a different woman. That was the woman that climbed out of the barn with her kid. Remember? Yeah. And they dragged her off by the hair, and then they took the kid back and threw the kid back in the barn, and then dragged her off and threw in her truck, and she got gang raped.
It's a great movie. It's a great movie. From a historical standpoint, though, in this movie, the Russians really kind of have the moral high ground. They're defending their own territory against fucking Einsatzgruppen, these fucking murderous band of fucking mobile fucking concentration camps, kind of like a carnival of terror, you know. And that's kind of how the movie ends. They're still at that point. I just kind of think historically, it's kind of sad that they lost the moral high ground. When the Russian army and its fucking their versions of the damn convicts in uniform come back and just rape every German woman they
That's
find.
What I mean. It's like,
and those girls back in Germany had no idea what was going on in the Eastern Front. They were totally bombarded with propaganda 24/7. You know, they thought they were liberating Russia, you know, from communists, you know. So they're just normal girls. They don't know what the hell's going on.
The thing about it is that you can't, war is hell and everything like that, but it's just kind of like, I really don't think that you can, it doesn't really help anyone or humanity in general if you're just going to do the same shit that your enemy was doing to you.
Yeah.
I understand the compulsion to do that.
Yeah.
I do. I understand that. Like, if somebody did some fucked up shit like that to me, I would absolutely be like, I'm going to do the same to you, but worse. You know what I mean? But you really have to fight that impulse.
I don't think I could do it, and I'm ex-soldier, ex-infantry. Because I know the difference between guilty and innocent. You put some chick in front of me and she's just an innocent civilian from some other country. How can I hold her responsible for something her man did?
That's what I mean. It's like, you can't. What the fuck does that person know about it?
Yeah.
Because like I said, I can put myself in the other shoes. It's like, look, if I lived in a war-torn country or something like that, and I was just some random-ass person, I didn't know shit about shit, you know, I wasn't on anyone's side, and I didn't like it, and then suddenly, like, all these people came in here and grabbed me and started doing all this to, like, blaming me for shit. I didn't do anything. Yeah.
The ultimate power play would be to pull out a fucking video and think, this is what your men did to my women, and just show her that.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do that to you, though. That'd be the ultimate fucking power play.
I mean, well, you know, and I mean, you shouldn't even want to do that. Right. You should just, like, not do it.
Right.
Because why do you want to, like, sink to their level? That's who you were fighting against. That was the whole point of you fighting against them, because you didn't like that they were doing that. Don't do the same shit as they were doing. Jesus Christ. That should be, like, pretty obvious, I would think. But I guess not. But I do understand the compunction to get revenge.
I would want to get revenge on the men. But only the men that were guilty.
And like I said, and the thing about it, like, look, if you got, like the, like the scene with, you know, where they captured the Germans.
Yeah.
But they knew that those Germans were there. They were responsible for that shit. Yeah. So I didn't really feel bad. It's like, yeah, don't set them on fire. That's a little excessive, because that's what they did to you.
Yeah. Probably.
And they won't learn. So it's like, what's the point? It's not like they're going to be like, oh, no, I'm so sorry. No, they're not. You know, they did that shit, but you know what I mean? But I understand that they just, like, gunned him down because they're like, fuck those people. But those people were there. They saw them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's not like they were punishing innocent people for shit that those assholes did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I could never do that. Like, why would you?
Yeah.
Just do it. Like I said, that's what makes you a monster, but you're still a human though. Like I said, that's what we were talking about earlier.
You go see, and he hadn't seen this movie, but it reminds him of
Empire of the Sun. That's a great movie. We should do that one, too.
The closest thing I can compare this,
this to... I have seen this compared to Empire of the Sun, too.
One thing I can compare this to is be Apocalypse Now.
This is kind of... I don't want to say it's similar, but it's...
a Russian Apocalypse Now.
It's in the same ballpark as Apocalypse Now.
And it's partisan warfare. Not conventional warfare. Partisan warfare. Which is militias. Civilian militias. Against damn criminal German units. Yeah. That's a good story.
Yeah. Winterfell Forever said, I don't think the Germans thought they were actually doing God's work. Why the secrecy then? Yeah, I think they knew what they were doing is bad. And there's a reason they built the death camps to isolate the murders in the SS administration, because mass slaughter was actually bad for morale.
Okay, now I can tell you why. Because there's speeches that have survived of why they were doing it. They said that what was required was basically no man could really do this. All right, and the German public can't know about this, that they're not strong enough. All right, so all this stuff had to be done in secret. So, no, I'm not saying that they thought it was right. No, they thought it was right, but they also thought that the public was too weak in the knees to get it done.
Yeah, there's like, well, this has to be done, and we have to, like, step up and do it.
It's now, their experience with these ISIS grouping is that there were too many psychological... Now, this is what they said. There's all these psychological casualties, because deep down, the German is a good man. He's not really for this. We have to get the right people to do this. And the right people to do it, when these camps were, was convicts,
psychopaths.
Called capos, psychopaths. Which were German psychopath criminals. Other Jewish prisoners, because you could say, if you work in this camp, we will put you into this fucking oven last. You know what I mean? We work for us.
Well, they would do that sometimes. They would set them against each other. They would give some of them like special privileges. Right. Like, we won't do all this horrible shit to you. We'll give you better food and all this other stuff if you help us. And some people did. And then some people said no.
And then they had certain aspects of SS security, which were the security guards for the camps, but they put the very low echelon dudes in charge of securing the camps, because they were going to kill them too. That they were going to erase the existence of those camps. And those German those German security guards in the SS that were securing those camps, they were going to die. They were eventually going to kill them. They were going to try to hide it. They were going to try to hide it from everyone. Yeah. And they weren't in Germany. They were in Poland, the death camps.
Yeah.
Now, Auschwitz and some of the other ones, the German civilians considered them to be terrorist camps. That's where you put terrorists and political prisoners. And it was more of them than there were Jews in Auschwitz. There were Jews in Auschwitz, but it was more also just political prisoners. And they killed them, but they killed them in different ways. They just starved them and worked them to death. But that was towards the end when most of Germany wasn't eating anyway. The death camp system was outside of Germany. Yeah. And it's because the Einsatzgruppen were a failure, basically. And then he started thinking in other ways. Mustache Man wrote a whole fucking little book on it right before, a little letter on it before he killed himself in the bunker. He said, what we should have done is used armies of lawyers, weaponized corporations, and used our basically weaponized medical system to do this by sterilizing them and euthanasia. People forget that the first victims of the Third Reich were Germans in the medical system. People that had, you know, mentally, anybody who was living a life unworthy of life, what they called it. In other words, somebody didn't have a future. People that had Down syndrome, mental problems. They euthanized them and then told the family that they had mysterious heart failure or kidney failure. They'd lie to them about what did it. And it was really because they couldn't afford to take care of wounded people. They wanted to divert all that money to a war effort that was coming. But no dead wood, no dead wood. People that were unhealthy, that would have no chance of getting any better, they put them under. Euthanasia.
Well, like I said, I kind of feel like I can understand if people might not want to watch this movie. Because it's not a pleasant watch. I said to Tom, I was like, I've been wanting to see this for a really long time. But I was like, I'm going to need a drink because this is going to be a real bummer. which it is. It's a very disturbing movie. And, like I said, it's not disturbing in the way that it's, like, super graphic. You don't really see a lot of people's limbs getting blown off or anything like that, like you would see in kind of, like, a bigger epic war movie, like, you know, Saving Private Ryan or whatever. But, in a way, the more intimate nature of it, because it was set, you know, it was basically from one kid's point of view, and it was just, like, his subjective experience, I think that made it more disturbing to me because it was more visceral. It was more one person's experience that you were seeing everything through their eyes, and the way the movie is shot makes you feel like you're there, like it's happening to you. Yeah. Like in a way that's not obtrusive, you know what I mean? It really does seem, it's very immersive in that way. So I kind of feel like that's what bothered me. And like I said, that one scene where she turns around and sees all this fucking butt, that fucked me up. Because I think I said, Jesus Christ, like out loud. You know what I mean? Like the first, because that was kind of the first. Everything before that had kind of been implication, but when she just did that, and then you just see that, and it's just kind of like, that was the first, like, really horrific thing that you saw, and then shit gets more and more horrific, like, as the movie goes on, but that's kind of the first thing that you saw, like, big as life, and it kind of, like, got to me. And like I said, I think the fact that the kid that's in this was so fucking great, and he doesn't even say that much, really. He doesn't have a lot of dialogue. So he does a really lot of acting with his face and with his, you know, body language, because he doesn't talk all that much. But you can just really see, like, as the movie goes on, he just starts developing this thousand-yard stare. You know what I mean? And it's just, like, really, really disquieting. I found it really disquieting. But like I said, I can see how, like, a lot of people that have seen this movie, and I've seen, like, a lot of people that commented about it that were, like, that are veterans and stuff like that, that are like, you know, I watched this movie and it's like, you know, it's fantastic, but holy fuck, I would never watch it again. Yeah. And I get that. This is definitely one you probably don't want to watch a second time.
All right, it's cool, Flynn.
It is. It's very cool. Good. I probably would. This kind of, and a lot of people too, because I know you haven't seen this one, but I've seen it. Another, like the British nuclear war movie called Threads.
Yeah.
Which again, this was on that level for me, like of disturbing. I mean, that movie is fucked up.
It's just a good story about an aspect about World War II that Westerners are not aware of. Partisan warfare, Eastern Front. And that's really where all the people were getting killed. That was 90% of the war. And we were kind of shielded from it.
Yeah, it was millions and millions.
Because we're focusing on the 101st and the 82nd and fucking Patton and the fucking, what was it, the 3rd Army or whatever, the 4th, Patton's 3rd Army and you know, that was the glorious sounding shit, you know,
where
tanks are shit.
And like I said, I kind of feel like a lot of war movies, especially Hollywood war movies, like some of them do concentrate on the Holocaust and things like that, but it's like a lot of them are concentrating on like battles. So they're concentrating on soldiers and like glory type of stuff. Everyone's got a mission and it's like there's heroes and villains and people get killed, but it's like it's all inspirational and shit at the end. This is not like that.
And most at all. War isn't like that. Real war is between civilians and it's murder.
This and this movie makes really this movie hits that point like very hard.
At the end of Second World War, before Mustache Man puts a bullet in his head, he said that he had wasted all of Germany's money on all those tanks, all those planes and soldiers and fucking Wunderwaffen, you know, these wonder weapons. Says that was all a waste of time. It was for nothing, and that the German people themselves failed. All right, that they failed him, and that they failed the fucking revolution. And he said, what they should have done is, in modern terminology, he said, we should have had armies of lawyers, NGOs, weaponized corporations selling dangerous products and entrapping people. And then he said, fucking aggressive campaigns for birth control and euthanasia. And what was the other thing? Selective breeding. All right. Nowadays, that probably would have been genetic engineering, all right? And that wasn't Mustache Man's idea. Those are the ideas that came from his military intelligence and his versions of, like, the intel community. His versions of the CIA cooked that up. They said that's what they really should have been doing, and then they would have won the war. It would have been cheaper, more effective, and no one would have known that the war was even happening. It would have been totally camouflaged. It just would have taken longer. And I think somebody listened to him, because I see a lot of shit in fucking the world. The CIA is kind of like that, and that's kind of the way things, the merger of corporations and banks and fucking government and medical and everything. It's all trying to consolidate power, and then they choose what kind of person they're going to make. That's what Mustache Man was talking about. Consolidation of power and making a kind of person that you want, and not creating the ones that you don't want. So, you know, Mustache Man's fantasy.
Xana said, there's no audio cues telling you she's about to see the body, so it catches you off guard. Yeah. I forgot to talk, too, about the sound design in this, which is also fantastic. At the beginning, or that's not at the beginning, but, like, at the end of the first act, I guess, like, when all the bombs start hitting the forest where him and Glasha are, he actually gets partially deafened by the bombs, and for the rest of the movie, like, you kind of don't, you're kind of hearing things the way he hears them. Like, his hearing improves as the movie goes on, but you constantly hear this, like, high-pitched whine.
Yeah, she tells everybody, you hear her saying that he's deaf.
Yeah, because because for a while, like, people yell things at him and he can't really hear it, it's garbled. Yeah. So you're, again, they're putting you in his shoes.
Right out of
so
Saving Private Ryan, in a way.
So you're hearing that, well, I think, I kind of feel like Steven Spielberg
might have ripped it off.
Watched this movie.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, this, I feel like this movie, it, you know, it got a little bit of play. And I think it even got a small theatrical release in the U.S. when it came out. I mean, he had to work for, the director had to work for like 8 years to get past like Soviet censorship to make this movie.
Yeah.
Because they said it was too realistic. So, but he finally got it made. He finally got it put out. And it did get a brief theatrical release here, I believe. And it did get some kind of play around at the time, like it got some, you know, critical accolades and stuff, but really I don't think people started talking about it again until Criterion put out a version, I believe, in 2020.
That makes sense, because I've seen a lot of Soviet movies. A lot of them are from like the 60s and shit. Some of the kids movies, you know, what was that, the Frost guy, who they called him Sinbad, but he wasn't Sinbad, he was, remember that shit? There's a Soviet movie thing, they show it to us as kids. They have Soviet movies were
fucking. Who, Jack Frost?
Jack Frost. Oh, well, no, it wasn't Jack Frost. It was.
I thought you were talking
about
that.
They were relabeling a Russian character as Sinbad.
Oh, yeah.
But you look at this motherfucker and you go, that is not a Persian. That's not an Arab or whatever. What is that? You know what I mean?
That was a movie that was on Mystery Science
Theater. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It wasn't Jack Frost. What was that called? That was a Russian movie.
It was a Russian movie.
But this one, what was the name of it?
Russian movie sucked.
I've seen it a bunch of times.
Russian movie sucked because they could only be two fucking, there could only be two subjects, communism or something traditional. So the traditional shit is really where you wanted to go. The communist shit was mostly bullshit. This is like the best communist movie that I've seen because it turns out he's fighting the communist censors to get it done.
Yeah.
So it's the less it's not, it doesn't come across as blatant propaganda.
Well, right? It didn't come across as, like that to me at all, and yeah, and especially like as the more that I researched it and the fact that the director just wanted to get across the experiences of his co-writer and of the people that lived through it.
I guarantee you the commies of the day wanted it to be propaganda. And he's probably fighting to go, no, I just wanted to be a war movie about what happened.
Yeah, just like, I wanted to show what happened.
Right. So,
because people in the world didn't really know about it.
Right. So this is a solid flick. It comes across as an independent, low-budget art flick that's well-made. But really good special effects because they're real. Real bullets, real fucking shit getting shot.
Yeah, and I don't even know if I
turns out accurate. Effects. I thought that was a P-38. No, it was a Focke-Wulf fucking recon plane. I didn't even know that plane existed.
See, there you go.
But does it fucking drop 4 paratroopers?
Well, I don't know.
We're going to find out. I'm going to research it later. Because they showed it dropping 4.
Because he has to, because, you know, it negates the whole movie if that bitch, one tiny detail is wrong.
That bitch dropped 4 paratroopers. I saw it happen. Okay. But it makes sense that it might.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't a ton of paratroopers. It was just a few of them.
And you were talking about recon scouts, guys that could spot artillery, and maybe snipers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's who you'd have in a recon plane. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I told you, I said, oh, that plane's spotting artillery. Because as soon as you see the plane, the artillery barrage happens. That plane's the forward observer. And then you see the fucking parachutes for them. Or 6, 4, I think. So I'm like, man, they dropped 4 paratroopers on a place they just fucking lit up with fucking artillery? And it made more sense now that I know that was a recon plane. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was, like I said, that was kind of the same, I don't know if it was the exact same plane, but it was reconnaissance planes that you were seeing the whole, because like I said, even at the beginning where they're digging up the guns on the beach, like just farting around before the shit hit the fan, he sees a spy plane over in the spy plane. You see it from their perspective, and they see the kids with the guns, like, standing on the beach.
For all of you who don't know me, I'm an ex-recon scout, 101st Airborne Division, 1st 327 Recon Platoon, also known as Tiger Force back in the day. One of the worst units ever. More war crimes and more fucking decorations than any platoon. 40-man recon platoon in Vietnam. Only Americans allowed to wear tiger stripe camouflage. Well, I think some SF guys did it too. But anyway. I recognize it's a recon plane. They would drop recon scouts. They could. The Germans would come up with some wacky shit like that because they had a limited aviation capabilities back then. And they like to want a plane to be able to have multi-roles, you know? So it makes sense that a recon plane could drop snipers and spotters. Yeah. That might be a good idea. Back in those days, with the technology of the day. But this is a good flick.
I mean, it's a classic.
Yeah, it's a good flick.
I don't know if I'd go, because I have seen a lot of reviewers say everybody should see this, like they should show it in schools and stuff. Maybe. But like I said, I understand if like some people don't want to watch it, because it is a huge bummer. But it does kind of make you confront some shit that you would probably not rather confront about human nature.
Oracle just jumped in. What's up, Oracle?
Hey, Oracle, what's up? Yeah, Caleb Wilson said, fun fact, Come and See is one of the highest rated movies on Letterboxd, along with The Godfather, Parasite, and Across the Spider-Verse.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, this has almost universal acclaim, really.
Across the Spider-Verse got rated that high?
Yeah.
Because we saw Into the Spider-Verse, we liked it.
Yeah, I haven't seen Across the Spider-Verse yet.
That's part 2.
I really liked Into the Spider-Verse. Yeah. We saw that in the theater. I thought it was fantastic.
Part 2 must be good. We'll have to see it.
Yeah, I've heard it was really good.
I want to see Spider-Man Noir.
Yeah.
Like which was the fucking noir version, like the black and white.
Yeah.
Fucking Dick Tracy or black and white fucking private.
Yeah, that would be cool.
That'd be cool. A great Spider-Man to see because, man, fucking he appeared in Into the Spider-Verse and I was like, man, I want to see a movie of just that guy. Yeah, it had a lot of good. They had a lot of good Spider-Mans.
It did, yeah.
Some of those fucking. Some of the, if you ask me, when it comes to superhero shit, the animated shit is really, makes more sense to me than the live action. Even though I like live action Batman, you know, but and some of the Supermans, Chris Reeve, but animation's better.
Well, you can do a lot more,
it's more believable
with it. And yeah, yeah, because you, it's, you know, it's more fantastical.
More fantastical, right, yeah.
Xana said, Tom paid way more attention to this movie than I thought he would.
Yeah, yeah.
I figured since there's no battle scenes, he'd be bored of it.
No.
Yeah, I mean, this is essentially, like I said, it's technically a war movie, but yeah, there's no big battle scenes or anything. It's almost, I want to say it's almost like a coming-of-age film, but in the most fucked-up sense imaginable. How about that? But, and like I said, it's kind of just showing a side of war that they don't usually put in movies because it's not real glorious, you know, for either side involved. So, but in that sense, I think that it's like really important for people to see it, like especially if they like war movies or they're interested in World War II, then I think this would be a good one to see.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel like it got forgotten for a long time because it came out in the 80s, but Criterion put out, I think it was either 2017 or 2020 that, yeah, they put out the Criterion edition. It probably says on here, but and I think that when that happened, like, a lot of people came, because I noticed there was, like, a lot of videos about it and a lot of discussion about it stemming from around that time period.
Yeah, the movie,
like,
does
when
not
came
feel
out.
1985 at all.
No, yeah, he was surprised when I told him that it was that
old.
Yeah,
I was like, really? It seems super modern.
It does,
it,
yeah.
It looks really good.
In a lot of ways, it does, yeah, seem. It didn't seem like an
80s
movie.
But it had
movie.
A lot of old school care. Because
yeah.
They're not, there's a lot of, they're actually shooting cows, all right?
Yeah.
I saw that fucking bullet go through that cow, that burst of rounds go through it. I was like, that was real. And I saw the expression on the cow's face. I was like, that was real.
Yeah.
And it turned out she confirmed, like, yeah.
Yeah.
The cow was like, what the hell happened? You got shot.
You got shot, poor cow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of sad.
It was Russia, bro. They ate it, though, I'm sure.
I mean,
a food cow anyway.
I hope so.
Yeah.
A food cow.
It's a food cow, yeah.
Like a food cow. Caleb says, film buffs love Across the Spider-Verse. Yeah, I've been wanting to see that. Like I said, we saw the first one.
Yeah.
We saw the first one, and I really, really liked it a lot.
Yeah, I appreciated it. That was, we saw that in the theater.
We did, yeah.
And it was like one of the best movies of that year, was that one.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like a sleeper. It didn't seem like anybody liked it. I was like, man, I liked that movie. I thought that was
Everybody liked that movie.
Did they? Okay.
Yeah. That got like pretty universal acclaim also.
All right, yeah.
Yeah. Oracle said, all cows are food cows, says the Texan.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
All cows could be food cows, sure.
Yeah. Although I suspect
sorry,
they shoot a horse.
But yeah, that's another
they
thing.
They eat those too, but I don't shoot horses. Stop it.
Yeah, I'm kind of like not a big advocate of
yeah.
just killing animals for a movie. Looking at you, Cannibal Holocaust.
Yeah, but the know. Thing is I kind of have a feeling that they, when it came to the horse, probably what it is that that horse was probably going to be put down for another problem.
Yeah,
so
maybe.
So they said, well, we'll just shoot it in this movie.
But, like,
and
making it suffer.
I don't have a proof that they shot it.
Yeah.
I saw the legs twitching. You could do that with drugs.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but, you know.
I don't know. I didn't see anything about that. But I did see some shit about, like, them. Yeah, they really did shoot the cow.
Yeah.
So there's that.
But it's a striking scene.
It really is.
Yeah.
And I mean, that. And like I said, they were really shooting at that kid.
Yeah.
So, like.
Yeah, the kid was in the line of fire. Fucking burst a machine gun around. Goes
and there's, like, all
right
these tracers
him,
and stuff.
Through
yeah.
the cow.
Yeah.
And the cow hits the fucking ground and its eyes are rolling. I'm like, what the fuck happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
This is a pretty fucked up movie, like
yeah.
I said. It's not super graphic in the sense of seeing people's limbs being blown off and stuff, but...
It doesn't need it.
It doesn't really need it.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, just the concept behind it and, like, just you watching it and thinking about it is fucked up enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Dana said, roasted horse is traditional Christmas German dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah, Caleb said, Come and See is one of those movies that doesn't feel outdated. It's a very well-made film.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can tell that they made this, and this was confirmed by interviews that I read with them. They made this because this was an important story for them that they
yeah.
wanted to tell. They even said that it's like, because I think even the co-writer that had, you know, that had gone through this, that was based on his experiences, he was like, you know, Americans probably won't watch this. And he was just like, well, then let them not watch it. Like, we want this to be out there because
yeah.
this happened and we want people to know about it. So if they don't watch it, they don't watch
Part
it.
Part of this
really
movie,
care.
The reason why it's powerful, it's kind of like a response to Hollywood.
Yeah.
Hollywood was going to focus on the camps. That
yeah.
was a small fraction.
Which, you know, is horrible
That's
enough.
Horrible enough, but
obviously.
That's a small fraction. Fucking, it's stealing the show. They're forgetting about those 27 million Russians. A lot of them Jews.
Because there was a lot of other fucked up shit that happened.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, and I think it's good that there's a movie like this that kind of, because this is kind of an unexplored
yeah.
aspect of World War II that maybe a lot of people don't really know about or aren't as familiar with.
I heard one Russian say that out of those 27 million killed Russians, that probably at least 6 million of them were Russian Jews. So, you know,
well, in this movie,
focus on a Jewish aspect of it. Yeah, the Russians got you covered on that too. It could have been probably that or more Russian Jews killed in this fucking by these Einsatzgruppen.
And at the end of this movie, it actually says that, you know, they're sort of fictionalizing some stuff that really happened, like where they just herded everybody into a barn and set it on fire and killed everybody. Yeah. They said this happened at 628 villages in Belarus.
Yeah.
That they know of. Actually, prior to this,
I think... That's just Belarus.
Yeah. Like, prior to this, I think they thought it was only a couple hundred, but then, like, they found out later on, like, through archaeological stuff and, you know, history and everything, they found out later it's... Yeah, they know that it was about 628 that they know of. That this same thing happened, where they came through, where the Germans came through, and just wiped out pretty much everybody. Set them all on fire, machine gunned all of them.
Raped them.
That, too. 628 villages that they know of. So yeah, all it's fucking horrifying to think about. Like I said, and especially if you know the history behind it, watching this movie is it's gonna fuck you up. It fucked me up a little bit. I'm gonna say I was still thinking about it like all day today. It really kind of like got to me, you know. All right, so are we ready to
wrap it up?
All right, so tomorrow I might, if I have time, I might do a movie review live stream tomorrow on The Killing of a Sacred Deer, the Yorgos Lanthimos movie from 2017. So I might do that. If I don't do it tomorrow, then I'll do it on Thursday probably. And Wednesday night it's Valentine's Day. So we're going to do our Valentine's Day special live stream, and it's going to be about good old Kurt and Courtney. Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love. Going to be talking about that whole romance and, you know, kind of the conspiracy theories.
That'll be a fun show, though. About. We'll talk about 90s shit and Kurt Cobain.
Because I remember all of that happened.
Yeah,
I just got out of high school.
Yeah.
Like when Nirvana got real big.
Yeah.
Because I graduated from high school in 1990. And then then Nevermind came out the year after that.
Cute clothes back then.
Yeah.
I thought they had cute clothes.
Well, Courtney Love actually later went in. Yeah. She had her own fashion line.
Yeah, I thought she
kind of based on that.
I like the dress. That started, the goth scene started to absorb some of that look too.
It did, yeah. It did, yeah. All right, so that's going to be the show Wednesday. Like I said, I might be on tomorrow talking about Killing of a Sacred Deer. We'll see if I have time to do that tomorrow, but I'm kind of hoping to. So thanks, everybody, for dropping by. Thank you again very much, Xanada, for sending us this movie, because like I said, I've been wanting to see this movie forever. And yes, even though it's not a fun watch, but it is an important movie that I think that more people should see. So I'll just say that. But like I said, I can understand if you don't, because it is pretty gut-wrenching. So yeah, we'll see you guys. I might see you guys again tomorrow, but we'll both see you on Wednesday night. Thank you for dropping by. We'll see you later.